Hello, my name is Dr. Steve Nurse, and this is the new show that we're going to be running for a few weeks. The name of the show is Abled, I-S-A-B-L-E-D, the radio show about possibilities. I'd like to thank Jeff Hoyt and the Voice of Vashon for allowing me to do this program. And special thanks to Rick Ames, who I also work with on the Morning Scramble on Wednesday. And to give you a little background on what we're going to do in this project, we're going to talk about disabilities. We're going to talk about how disabilities affect families, how disabilities affect people in school. A little background on myself. I've lived on Vashon for 35 years. I've been married for 48 years, longer than 35. So. And I have two children who were adopted from Korea. I still call them kids. They're 40 and 43. I'm a retired professor emeritus from Central West University, where I taught graduate and undergraduate classes in special education. So that's basically my background in disabilities. I hold an MSW in physical disabilities and education doctorate in special ed. I do use an electric wheelchair for mobility as a result of a spinal cord injury in 1972. I've also got some other folks here helping me talk about our topic today. And I've got Jenna Risto. Jenna and I also have kids. I've been here about the same age. So she was an educator in universities and schools. She was a mental health therapist, a trainer, and a program coordinator for school counselors. Currently, she serves on an educational nonprofit board. One of her passions is working to promote the human-animal bond. And I think Vashon is a great place for that, with VIP and all our other organizations, and really respecting animals. And we think that's really important. She does this by working with her therapy dog in the community, training the therapy dog teams, and helping them prepare to be evaluated. Jenna is Pet Partners Team Evaluator and a National Program Educator. So she knows a lot about dogs that are used for therapy, dogs that are used for comfort, and service dogs. Also here is Char Phillips. She's a guide dog leader for the Guide Dogs for the Blind Vashon Puppy Raising Club. And I think anybody who's been on the island has probably seen puppies out here, wandering around at Strawberry Festival, and most of the dogs right now are smart enough not to get out in the rain, but the dogs are out, and she has quite a few families that she works with in raising these dogs. The club raises puppies for guide dogs for the blind, and there's an associated student body club at Vashon High School, a 4-H club with a Washington Cooperative Extension Program, and it's a guide dog club. I think sometimes, we talk about guide dogs working with blind persons. And I think that's really important. But I think we also need to realize that that's just only kind of the tip of the iceberg sometimes in how dogs and how animals can help humans with anything from detecting people that might have diabetes issues and persons with seizure disorders. I have my own guide dog or service dog, excuse me. Her name is Ellen. She is a Australian Shepherd and a German Shepherd. Her club has raised 147 puppies, not all at the same time. They've been raising guide dog puppies at Vashon for the past 20 years. Adults and students, and she says age 9 to 99, can volunteer to help raise and train guide dog puppies. So if you had any questions on that, you could either call us here at the station, or I'm going to give you my email address, and you could contact her through me. They meet at Vashon High School every Tuesday, 4:30 to 6. And she says you can be 9 to 99. I guess when I'm 100, I can't do that anymore. But If I'm still around when I'm 100, are you still going to let me
sure.
guide a puppy dog? Yes, okay. That sounds good. I think that my purpose in doing this series of presentations is to discuss disabilities and the persons experiencing those disabilities from a positive perspective rather than a negative one. I really want to focus on what persons with disabilities can do and what they can accomplish rather than what they cannot do. Persons with cognitive, sensory, and physical disabilities can compete and contribute in this world. And I think that with both my guests today, both with Jen and Char, I think they really are very passionate towards that and really feel that dogs can help in that process. I feel that persons with disabilities have reached equality with their non-disabled peers when they have families, raise children, hold down jobs, participate in their community as anyone else would in our society. If anyone else is listening and would like special topics covered during these different programs that I'll be offering, and we'll let you know ahead of time on the Voice of Vashon page, you can contact me. My email is graduate22@comcast.net. That's graduate, the numbers 22@comcast.net. We'll be doing the first series of 28 minutes and talking about service animals for persons with disabilities. And I really decided I want to put a name on this. I decided to call it Service Animals. Why Are My Animal Friends Smarter Than Me? And so that's what we're going to talk about first. One of the reasons is that this whole area of service animals, comfort animals, is really controversial. Excuse me. We see animals in just about any place now that we didn't see them before, in restaurants, in grocery stores, schools. And it's really important to know that the Americans with Disabilities Act, who addresses these issues for persons with disabilities, really only recognizes service animals as service dogs. Also, there is a problem with other animals that are that people want to have as comfort animals. We talk about, Jenna mentioned this morning to me, even somebody was wanting to have a service peacock. You know, we've talked about reptiles, and so we really want to clear this issue up for us. And so, Char, why don't you first of all talk about how you would describe a service dog versus a comfort dog or a therapy dog, and then maybe Jenna can talk about the therapy dogs and comfort animals.
Sure. So service dog, in order to be, according to the ADA, it has to perform a task. So that means that they are doing something for a person, actually doing something. And that's a really important part of being a service animal. And you can get a vest and say that your dog is a service dog, but it's really important that they go through the training and that they are certified, so that it helps with the other animals that are out there, like our guide dogs. There's a lot of guide dog users that are out there, and if they run into people who just have an animal that they say is a service dog, but it's not well trained, it could attack that guide dog, and it could make it so that it never is able to guide again. So it is really, really important that people follow those rules and get their dog certified as a service dog in order to be out there in public with them. And it helps the other people that really need a service animal.
Yeah. Does the action that the animal provides, the dog provides, does it have to be a physical action, helping them with strength, or helping them?
It doesn't have to be strength. Good examples is someone who has diabetes and they're starting to feel bad. That dog may just take them to somebody to help them. It may bring them over to someplace to sit down. It may just nudge them. It A lot of people's service animals will actually wake them up. Say if they're sleeping and they're starting to go into some kind of problem, sure. The dog will wake them up. But it has to perform a task to be a service dog.
And so the dog would be trained specifically to perform the duties or the tasks that that person.
That is correct.
That person.
Yes.
Needs.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes.
Okay. What other kinds of things do they need to, are there other requirements that they need to have? Do they have to be checked?
Well, they should have all their shots.
Right. Yeah, well,
if you've gone through a regular program, you would have that.
Sure.
So with your guide dogs for the blind, those puppies are raised in raisers' homes until they're about 15 months old. Go back to the guide dog school for approximately 2 to 3 month training with professional instructors, and then they're paired with a visually impaired person. They spend 2 weeks at the guide dog campus learning to become partners before they're out on the street actually guiding somebody.
So that socialization is
huge for a guide dog. Yes. Okay. And again, being a puppy raiser, and I've raised 23 dogs, and it's really important when you have that puppy out in public that the other dogs are on leash, under control, so that they don't bother our puppies. Well, these are just puppies. Now think of if you are visually impaired and you are out working a guide dog and somebody just lets their dog come running over, barking and snarling at your guide dog, it can be very disruptive for somebody without no sight.
Do you think that sometimes we almost kind of give these guide dogs, or we think these guide dogs have more powers and more abilities than they have? For instance, I saw a question answer in an article that said when a guide dog comes to an intersection, can they tell the difference between red and green? And I'm sure the answer is probably no.
You know, it's amazing how much the guide dogs actually learn. But a lot of it is once they're partnered and you know, just like us, we have our usual days and we go to work and we're going down the same streets and stuff. So the dogs do learn, you know, they learn like, okay, let's go to the grocery store, and they will take the person to the grocery store. But in their training as a guide, they're going to learn left, right, hop up, halt, fast, slow. They're always going to stop at curbs, intersections, and anything that is physically in a person's way. So hanging trees, low branches, things like that. They're going to stop, let the person feel around. Okay, I know this is the way we can go. And then they'll tell their dog forward again. So when it comes to a stoplight, they're also going to pay attention to traffic. And so guide dogs have learned intelligent disobedience. So if the person says forward and the dog doesn't go forward, it's because there's a car coming. So there is that traffic pattern. But a visually impaired person, in order to get a dog, has to be mobile, and they have to be able to know their directions.
You know, that's great, because I noticed with my own, just some of the things you've said, I mm-hmm. noticed with my own service dog, that when I've got her and I've got her in a jacket and she's got her jacket on, that she is in a different mode than when I just have her on a leash.
That's true.
If I really want, you know, she, at that time, she knows she's working.
Correct.
And she is much more aware of things if I'm downtown. I'm kind of interested into what she's aware of sometimes, because I was walking downtown, going across an intersection, and a person was, I don't know if they'd been drinking or something, but they kind of lunged towards me. And right away, she got right in there and created that space.
Yeah.
And was protecting me. And then, of course, looked up for a treat later, which I did not give her. But it's highly motivated by food. But
service animals are very good about feeling our emotions and also what is safe for not only them, but for us. And the longer that they're partnered with a person, the more that they seem to be doing that job.
Let me ask you this question, because this has to do with the animal bonding, too. And I may just be perceiving something I'm not seeing, but sometimes if I come home from work, or if she's come home with me, and I'm upset about something or I'm grumpy, which as a 70-year-old person, I'm grumpy a lot, dog seems to sense it.
Oh, they definitely
you think
do.
That's, you think that's a fair
yes.
statement to make?
And they do feel your emotions, your good emotions, your happy emotions, and your sad emotions, and your angry ones. And so that's another thing for training dogs. It's very important that you have the right frame of mind when you pick up that leash, because it transfers through that leash, and they feel it, they know it.
Also, I notice when she comes home, if we've been out all day, she like, get away from me. I need to rest. You know, I'm tired.
And they need that too.
I think they need that too.
And
yeah.
they need playtime. And a good service dog should have that opportunity to be free and not have to do anything. I mean, it's just like us. They work and then they should have their time off.
And consistency, I think, is
very important.
Is really important for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tell me about the responsibilities of someone that owns a service dog. We think about just about having a dog and, you know, the dog goes in and out of the house and eats and plays. But I think when you have a service dog, there are other things that are, that are important that, what does it mean to have a dog? You have to maintain the dog and groom?
Well, of course, it would be the same as a pet in that you're going to make sure that they are well fed and that they're a good weight, because it's going to be hard for them if they're overweight or underweight in order to do their job. And you're going to make sure that they stay up on all of their vaccinations, not only for your animal's safety, but also for other animals that you're going to encounter, because you're out there in the real world. So those are important things. And to give them that time, they can just relax or go out and play and chase the ball. That's important too for them.
Right. Yeah. Just for the exercise. I've noticed mm-hmm. when I've had, it's been nice to have two dogs, you know, one is a service dog and one is not, but they play a lot together. And I think that's important too.
Yeah. And that's a question that a lot of people ask us that are training guide dogs. Do they ever get a chance to just play? Yeah, they do. You know, we go to work and the dog is with us and they usually are sleeping while we're working. And then when we go home, we turn them out in the backyard and they get to go and run and play. And that's an important part of their day.
If you think, if you're out there in the public and you see some with a dog and the dog is exhibiting what you would consider poor behavior, how would you approach a person like that? Would you say anything? Would you, I know there are some questions you can ask and some questions that you can't ask.
Well, if it's a service animal, there are only two. You can ask them if it's a service animal. And then your second question is, what task does it perform? Those are the only two legal questions that you can ask somebody.
And they don't need to provide you with any other documentation?
No, they don't have to show any documentation. And now a business, if an animal comes in, and it doesn't matter if it's a certified service dog, if it's a guide dog, if it's just somebody's mutt, doesn't matter. If they go into a store, excuse me, and the dog is causing trouble or misbehaving, the owners of that store can tell them to leave.
Okay, that's good.
That's a very important part. And it's good for people to know that those are the two questions that they can ask. If they're worried about a dog that they think it might be dangerous to somebody and it's in a place where it shouldn't be, they can walk up to them and it's legal to ask those two questions.
Here's just I guess we need to have our disclaimer that these are our opinions, but
Well, that is in the ADA, those two questions.
I guess the question I was going to ask you, would you like to see a situation where people had to provide more?
I would love that. And it depends on what state you're in. Washington does not. And so for like training a guide dog or a service dog that's in training, we don't have access if a business doesn't want us in there. If you are in Oregon, yes, they do. They have access to everywhere, even though they're in training. Now, a certified service dog has access everywhere in Washington. So they have put some legislature in there now in Washington that if you're misrepresenting a service dog, that there is a fine, which that's this year that has happened. Oregon has always had that, and a lot of other states have. So it has a lot to do with our legislature as to what is legal.
It seems to me it's kind of on the same plane as if when I park in a wheelchair place, I need to have a placard. I need to have something that says...
It helps. It helps when there's something physically showing, but again, Washington doesn't require it. With our guide dogs, we always have their vest on if we're going to be out in public, and other service animals also have that. Canine Companions for Independence, which does a lot of different service animals, they have a vest for their dogs that are in training and their dogs that have qualified as service dogs, and that's very helpful. We also carry cards that say that we have a guide dog puppy in training, so that if anybody questions us, we can show them that. But here in Washington, if they ask us to leave, we leave.
I know that when I was training with my dog, Ellen, if we went into a place during that training period, we always checked with them if it was a restaurant.
It's always good to
check with them before. Yeah, that makes sense. Because I think it would, and I know with Ellen, she gets recertified. I recertify her every year. Once a year, I go in and we go into usually down on Pearl Street. We usually go into Fred Meyer or someplace. She needs to be able to, if we have coffee in there, go under the table, stay under the table. That doesn't mean she doesn't look up for things that I drop, and I do drop things occasionally.
Who certifies her?
She's certified through the Prison Pet Partnership Program. Later on, we're going to talk to some of the women that do the training out there at the prison in some of the later segments. And I think that we talk about that human bond. That is so important because when you have the women that are inmates, they have burned every bridge that they possibly can. And now you have a dog that relies upon you for food and water and companionship. And it's also important for the inmates to know that you don't discipline through hitting the dog or, which is kind of what they know many times in their normal lives. They've been in abusive situations. And well, thank you very much. I appreciate all that. Appreciate all that help. Jenna, Jenna Ristall again. Would you like to just talk a little bit about we talk about therapy. You have some therapy. You have a therapy dog. And what's the dog's name?
Rain.
Huh. Oh, well, I think that's a bad name right now. I know. I think that's actually really, really good. But
I just have to put a plug in because Rain was raised by Char as a guide dog.
Oh, is that right? Oh, very good.
And the reason I got her was she had a heart murmur. Guide dogs have to be perfect physically in order to work, in order to breed for other guide dogs. And so I got Rain at 14 months because in her extensive training, they found a heart murmur, which went away a year later.
That's interesting because I know with, especially with the service dogs that I've worked with, we always do, a lot of dogs have problems with hip dysplasia.
Arthritis.
And arthritis. Mm-hmm. And so you really have to watch out for those kinds of things too.
Right. And that's something that they usually develop with age. Most animals do. But anyway,
give me some more information on that.
So what I would like to talk about is therapy animals and emotional support dogs and the difference between the two, because I think there are a lot of misconceptions about that. So a therapy animal can provide physical, psychological, and emotional support and benefits to those that they interact with. And they're typically in facilities such as healthcare, assisted living, schools, airports. Most of them wear vests or scarves, something to identify them as therapy dogs. 94% of the animals that I evaluate are dogs, but I also evaluate cats, horses, mini horses usually, llamas, and rabbits.
Can you train a cat?
You can train a cat. There's a lot.
I mean,
if you go on YouTube, you'll see they can sit, they can stay, they can fetch. It's amazing what you can train a cat to do. But I will back up and say the dogs have to, or any animal, has to have that aptitude. They have to love people. They have to be really good around other animals and not react to distractions, whether they're auditory or visual. They have to just be really stellar in their behavior. There's a rigorous training and there's a rigorous evaluation, which I'll talk about a little bit.
So it's almost kind of the attitude of the dog. I mean,
Initially, people say, oh, I want my dog to be a therapy dog, but you know, he doesn't really like other dogs. Well, you're going to interact with other dogs. You will see other dogs in facilities, and you just can't have a dog that is going to snarl and growl when you're working them as a therapy dog. The basic thing that we want to see is that you instill confidence in other people. Yeah. They're going to see a dog walking on a loose leash down the hall of a facility, and someone's going to think, wow, that dog is really under good control and has good behavior.
It's kind of like saying, I'd like to be a mental health counselor, but I really don't like working with people.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, I that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So these therapy animals work with a wide range of people, and they have to safely interact with a wide range of people.
So that would then mean not jumping on
exactly.
them and really being...
They can't... Right.
If you work in a nursing home, you know, the animal can be petted, but can't, you know, hop up on a bed or that kind of thing.
They can if the nursing home allows it. Uh-huh. Because animals go into hospitals,
right.
And frequently they get on the bed with the patients, uh-huh. and the hospital is okay with that. Or they sit in a chair right next to the patient. So they're always under the authority and control of their handler. We call them handlers, and we call them therapy dog teams.
It really is interesting that how when we work with the animals, they're really trained for... specific kinds of things and
mm-hmm.
and different environments. And I think the dogs can tell the different environments. And I think that's something that we can talk in our next segment. And I'm going to let people go right now. I hope you've enjoyed Is Abled, the radio show of possibilities. And we will see you in the next segment.